So we've been working over the last couple of months with the Noble Eightfold Path. At the beginning of this teaching, we discussed the question, what is a path? And I thought it would be good, as we come to the end of the teaching, to discuss the question, what is a noble path, or what does it mean to be noble? One of the ways the Buddha kind of put this out there, sometimes this seems a little harsh. We kind of talked about this yesterday, you know, some of the ways that the translations of what he said, most assuredly what he said in a lot of ways may seem harsh, but we can take it in the spirit in which it was given, the spirit of compassion. He said, or he often talked about two kinds of people, what he called run-of-the-mill people and noble beings. So run-of-the-mill sounds a little pejorative, and I suppose to some extent it's meant to be. When he was talking about, or when he talked about run-of-the-mill people, these are people who go along with the ways of the world, who follow the stream. What does that mean? Essentially, that means they, you know, we're all kind of somewhere, you know, along the continuum between being run-of-the-mill and noble. They ascribe to the world's path for happiness, or they follow the world's prescription for happiness. What the Buddha said, and I don't think it's changed so much since the time of the Buddha, was that most beings, run-of-the-mill beings, look for happiness in sense pleasures. So that might be, you know, the cake or the ice cream, but it's certainly also, as he talked about, you know, the different forms of entertainment, the television, the movie, the smartphone, the iPad, the iPhone, so on and so forth, that we look for happiness in these things. This is where we look for happiness in life. And he said that we look for happiness in gain, acquisition. So it might be money, making money, or acquiring possessions. He said the run-of-the-mill person looks for happiness in status and in praise. So other having other people like you, doesn't status doesn't necessarily mean you're a movie star or a paragon of enterprise. Business, but you know, we look for happiness in what other people think about us and what they say about us, the way they deem us, our status, and the praise that we receive. You know, and there is a certain happiness that comes from sense pleasure, gain, status, and praise. Now, a noble person is looking, somebody who's really looking for a greater happiness than that happiness, is kind of one way to think about it. So therefore, a noble person is somebody who doesn't ascribe to the ways of the world, or doesn't follow that prescription of looking for happiness in the ways of the world, looking for happiness in sense pleasure, gain, status, and praise. And again, you know, we're kind of all somewhere along the continuum. I mean, for me, it really begins with not accepting outright or blindly what the world tells us. The world is telling us that this is where happiness is. You know, people in our lives are telling us this. This is what we learned in school. This is what is on television. You know, that happiness comes from these things. And so the beginning of being a noble person is to begin to question that. Not to accept that outright, not just to go along with the stream, go along with what everybody else is doing it, because that's what they're doing. The noble person says, I'm going to find out for myself. I'm not going to take it, you know, I'm not going to take it blindly that this is what the culture says, this is what others say is the way to happiness. I'm going to look and see for myself where happiness lies. A noble person looks for a greater happiness, as I've said, a happiness that is an expression of their truth, a happiness that we sometimes call the happiness of the heart. And the Buddha was really clear about this, you know. And of course, one of the most famous teachings he gave was the teaching to the Kalamas, who said, you know, people are coming here, you know, they're telling us that this is the way to happiness, this is the right path to follow, what should we do? And he said, well, don't listen to what anybody tells you, you know. Don't follow any doctrine or dogma or any teacher. See for yourself. See for yourself where happiness lies. Look for yourself. Of course, this is where it begins to become a little bit of a rub, right? Because it's a lot easier to have other people tell us and just to go along. You know, this is where it becomes, you know, where we have to start to make some effort, because we're asked to find out for ourselves where happiness lies. Find out for ourselves what's going to lead us to a greater happiness in this life. And of course, the Buddha, you know, offered some, even in his teaching to the Kalamas, who really weren't well-versed in a lot of spiritual paths, he offered, you know, some basic guidelines by asking them, you know, when you take actions out of greed and aversion, does that lead you to happiness? Ask that question. When you take actions out of love and compassion, does that lead you to a greater happiness? So he kind of offered a way to a greater happiness and asked us to investigate and see. Yeah, and this is what he did, of course, right? I mean, he had and was brought up in a way that that dictated that this was that happiness came through sense experience, through acquisition, etc. He had all that, and he questioned that. He said, "I'm going to find out for myself. I'm going to look for myself." You know, and he didn't really know. You know. I mean, at least we have the understanding of what he discovered, and you know, we have his awakening to at least inspire us or point us in the direction or give us some conviction to start with that there is a greater happiness. But this is what the Buddha did. He looked for himself. He didn't take it. You know, he didn't accept what his parents said and what his culture said was where happiness lies. Now, this is what the Thai forest monks did. You know, Tanchev was here last year. He talked about the Thai forest tradition and where it came out of, which is, of course, is the tradition that we follow. You know, the great Thai forest monks of the late 19th century, early 20th century, through the 20th century, you know, they were monks who were part of the system of being monks in Thailand, which was really a system of a bureaucracy. Monks were really, you know, kind of bureaucrats. They were more like government officials than anything else. And then, you know, there were very kind of guidelines that they were supposed to follow and things that they were supposed to do that the government, because there's no separation between church and state, asked them to do. And they rejected that. You know, they rejected that. You know, they said, you know, we're not going to do what you tell us to do. We're going to start to explore what the Buddha said and see what he did and see if we can do what he did and find out, you know, where happiness really is. You know, and that's why they became, you know, the real reason why they became forest monks is they had to get away from, you know, the government and all the officials. So they went into the forest and looked for the truth inside of themselves. You know, they didn't find the truth in the forest. They found the truth inside of themselves. Of course, one of the things that's so important about, you know, what the Buddha taught in terms of where happiness lies, and what's so clear, and if you look at the story of the Thai monks, that it doesn't matter where you come from, you know, in your culture. It doesn't matter in his day what caste you were from. Most of those Thai monks were peasants. You know? I mean, this was very important at the time of the Buddha, where there, you know, were castes in India. It didn't matter what caste you were from. That didn't determine your happiness. I mean, we kind of, you know, it's not so structured or well-defined here, but, you know, we kind of believe that. It's sort of like what social class I'm part of, you know, is going to define my, whether or not I have happiness in this life. I mean, the other thing I think that's really important when you consider the case of the forest monks was that they were peasants, almost all of them, and most of them were illiterate. You know? So, you know, the effort to find a greater happiness was an effort that wasn't going to manifest in reading and studying. You know? You weren't going to find it in books, which of course is so much of what, you know, our culture is about. It's like, I'm going to read the book, I'm going to go to the talk, I'm going to listen to the tape. Happiness wasn't found through this book knowledge, it was found through you know, looking inside. It was found through what they did. Thanissaro Bhikkhu talks about, you know, the difference between warrior knowledge and scribe knowledge. You know, scribe knowledge is the knowledge that we get from books and talks, etc. You know, it's sort of the knowledge that we get from other people. Warrior knowledge, you know, and it's a good term for it, is the knowledge that we develop through what we do in terms of looking for ourselves where there's happiness, you know, and in order to do that, you have to be a warrior. You're going against what other people said. You said, I'm not going to go by what other people said, or I'm not even going to rely on what's in books. I'm going to really make this effort to look for myself, to see where happiness is, and to see what I need to do and the actions that I need to take in order to be happy. This is what it means to be noble. This is what it means to be noble. So the noble path is a path that we make. It's a path that we, you know, again, you know, the teachings give us these parameters, but ultimately it's a path that we create. You know, so it's really highly creative, you know, which again, you know, there's the rub there too, because we would rather that others tell us what to do. But we really have to see for ourselves. Because, you know, this path is about our actions and what we do in terms of our mental training. And your happiness depends upon what you do and what you find out through your mental training and taking action. It's just like the meditation, right? You learn that in the meditation. What you get out of the meditation is based on what you do. It's what you do. You know, your meditation can be informed by love and compassion and joy, and it could be a process through which you gain wisdom and open your heart, or it could be something where you make yourself miserable. Yeah. Now, a lot of times, of course, you know, we sit down to meditate and you know, our capacity to do what we need to do, if it's to meditate with an intention informed by loving kindness, or if it's to see clearly into the breath or the body, is impinged upon by our past karma. So it could be the past karma of what happened this afternoon. You know, you got into an argument with somebody, you come here to the class, you're agitated, it's hard to stay with the breath. See, that's really when you learn to make your path, you know, because it's sort of like, you know, am I going to go along with my past karma, or am I going to do something about it? You know, or your past karma has something to do, as it does for most of us, in terms of, you know, defending ourselves against being present, and we tend to go into sleepiness when we meditate. Are we going to give into that, or are we going to do something? Are we going to make and find our own way to happiness? It's really about all that you do. It's all that you do in the meditation. It's all about what you do in the meditation that determines whether or not the meditation is going to be an action, because it's really an action that leads you towards happiness or towards suffering. It's all about what you do. Which means, of course, that it's an action. You have to do, you have to think, you have to guide yourself, you have to ask questions in the meditation, just like you have to do in life. Is this an action that I want to take? Is this a person that I want to spend my time with? Is this something that I want to do? It's all about what you do. I mean, this is what the path is all about. You know, and a noble person who is one that takes that responsibility upon themselves. We take responsibility for our own happiness, and we do that joyfully. A noble person in following the Buddha's path understands and acts accordingly, understanding that it's up to what we do that's going to determine our happiness. And we'd rather not do that. You know, we'd rather say, it's really up to what's on TV tonight. You know, if I can find a good show on TV tonight, then I'll be happy, or a good book to read, or a person to talk to that I want to talk to. But what the teachings of the Buddha guide us towards is finding happiness through what we do, and the mental training that we engage in so that we can understand what we need to do, developing the skills so that we can make that path, the skills of mindfulness and discernment, or as we often talk about in this group, skills of our sitting meditation, and our natural meditation, you know, and being heedful and paying attention to our actions. And we talk always again and again about those being the three basic skills. If we can develop those skills, you know, we can make the path. Those are the skills that we need to make the path. But we have to make the path. We have to apply those skills, develop our meditation, maintain the breath in all postures, and put that to good use by being heedful and looking at our action and asking the questions that we need to ask. So perhaps what's most important about being somebody who's noble is that we have conviction. We have conviction in the Buddha's awakening, but ultimately what that means, and ultimately what's important in terms of our conviction or our faith, is that we have faith in ourselves. We have faith in ourselves. We believe in ourselves. We have reverence for ourselves. A noble person has reverence for himself or herself. Love for him or herself. As the Buddha looked at the way he was living, you know, as a young man, he realized that he could do a lot better. He said, this isn't fitting. You know, I can do a lot better. As a human being, I have the potential to do a lot more and to be a lot, have a lot more happiness than I'm offered in living the way that I'm living. He had faith in his goodness and his capacity to develop it. You know, and as a noble person, you know, we have faith in our goodness. We have faith in our goodness. So when we rely on all those other things, you know, we're not, you know, we're asserting a lack of faith in what we have inside of ourselves. And the more that we do that, the more that we become dependent on all those other things, the worse we feel about ourselves. Now, they see that in Thailand now, you know, now that, you know, there's a lot more media and television and internet, you know, people say, oh, I want this, I want that. They don't feel so good about themselves. You know, low self-esteem is starting to come into play. So a noble person, we have faith in ourselves, reverence for ourselves, belief in our own goodness. And we act accordingly from there. We act accordingly from there. You know, our actions come out of that. You know, a noble person is one who makes a noble path, you know, who creates this noble path in the service of developing his or her goodness. You know, so we follow a path that is informed by developing our goodness, with the understanding, of course, that that's the path to happiness, which is so different than a path of trying to make money and have a claim, etc. It's a different way of living. It's a different way of living. We follow a path in the service of cultivating our goodness, or another way that I like to put it or think about it is fulfilling our potential. So the Buddha said, this isn't fitting that I'm living the way that I'm living. I'm not fulfilling my potential as a human being. I think as a human being, I can do more than this. There's more available to me in terms of happiness. So a noble person is one who seeks to fulfill his or her potential. Not the potential to make more money or acquire more things, but the potential of the heart, the potential of our goodness, which is a potential. We have this potential inside of ourselves. So we have this potential, we believe in ourselves, and we do what we need to do in following the path to develop our goodness. And of course, so much of this includes how we affect others. We develop our goodness, this has a great effect on others. So there's so much this past year, after my mom died and after my friend Jim died, how what they left behind was their goodness, Such a profound effect on me in my life, knowing those beings, and being affected by them and having the example of their goodness, and the way that their goodness touched me. Because that's what it's all about, After you're gone, the cell phone, that's only going to last about a year. That shows how lasting that is. But in following this path and being a noble being, we are acting in a way in which we're developing something that is going to live beyond us, that transcends those things that are impermanent, that transcends coming and going. So we can just end with a question, I think it's always good to end with a question. This is always food for thought, but to continue to chew on the question of what is noble? What does it mean to live a noble life?